Committee will now come to order. Missy, please call the roll.
Chair Latvala.
Here.
Vice Chair McLean.
Here.
Committee Whip Andrade. Ranking Member Williams.
Here.
Representative Lupus.
Here.
Representative Arrington.
Here.
Representative Bell.
Here.
Representative Barrero.
Here.
Representative Bush.
Here.
Representative Fine.
Here.
Representative Harding.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hunshofsky.
Here.
Representative Lamarca.
Here.
Representative Maney.
Here.
Representative Mariano.
Here.
Representative McCurdy.
Here.
Representative Morales.
Present.
Representative Trabulsi.
Here.
Representative Tuck.
Here.
Representative Valdez.
Present.
Good afternoon, members. Today we have three bills on the agenda, and we will get started with the first one, which is going to be from Representative Rizzo, CS for House Bill 865. Representative Rizzo, you are recognized.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members. HB 865. Charter schools will provide the following. It will establish legislative intent that charter school students should be considered as important as all other school-aged children in the state and at funding levels that should be comparable to students in the traditional or government-run schools. It will also allow for a new commission to be created at the DOE, which will act as an alternative authorizer that can review charter applications in order to approve or deny them. We'll also allow for a school district to require additional financial reporting from a charter school that has been identified as being, quote, in deteriorating financial condition, end quote, as defined in statute. And it will provide language to ensure charter schools that are fulfilling the commitments of their charters and their students may not be closed without cause. And there are some amendments as well. And that is the bill, sir.
Thank you, Representative Rizzo. Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Seeing none, there are five amendments. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to explain Amendment 249655.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment actually will establish the Charter Review Commission, it also allows that the Department of Education shall contract with a college or university to provide administrative and technical assistance to the Charter Review Commission by reviewing and providing an analysis of charter school applications submitted to the commission. And that is the amendment, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Representative Valdez, you're recognizing questions.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair McLean, and thank you very much, Rep. Rizzo, for bringing this bill forward. My question is, will the commission be compensated? And if so, what would be the appropriation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you for the question, Representative. Yes, they will be compensated. Right now, it is estimated, depending on how many people, the estimate could be anywhere from $800,000 to about $1 million for the commission for the year.
Recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. So what would be the estimated salary for one particular commissioner?
Recognize.
Thank you. It's a range, really, and since right now there is no appropriation with it, the DOE has basically come up with an estimate. It could be anywhere from $40,000, maybe $50,000, $60,000.
Members, in questions? All right, seeing none, is there public testimony on the amendment? There is. Wendy Dodge? Thank you. Oh, she's coming. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Wendy Dodge, and I'm Director, Senior Director of Legislative Affairs and Policy for the Polk County School District. As it relates to the Charter School Review Commission, we're not necessarily opposed to the concept of an alternate or statewide authorizer We supported the original Florida Schools of Excellence when it was passed by the legislature many years ago. We are unfortunately opposed to this model of an alternate authorizer where this entity would approve the schools or approve the applications and then send them down to the school district to be the sponsor and support and contract with. It's not used by any other state in the country, including those with a longstanding history of alternate and statewide authorizers. And under all successful models of authorizing, the entity that approves the application is also the entity that provides the support to the schools. We also disagree with the need for an additional statewide authorizer or alternate authorizers. Our state universities currently can do that, and that was passed last year. It was because it was recent, the rules haven't been promulgated for them to do that, but that ability is already in law. And then when you look at the recent charter application data, the most recent data available, there were 60 charter applications statewide. 40 of them were approved by the current authorizers. 20 were withdrawn because they needed more work to make sure that they were going to be able to be successful schools. 2 were denied, but they were not appealed. I can remember when Miami-Dade County used to get 60 applications just themselves. And so the number of applications statewide have greatly decreased. And you're doing this, so you're adding another authorizer at a time when we're not seeing as many applications for schools. We do appreciate the addition of requirements for the members of the commission to have charter school experience. We would also like to recommend that somebody on the commission have charter authorizing experience because it's a different skill set to run a charter school as it is to review a charter application and look at transportation and exceptional student education and a budget for all those things and how to support ESOL students, those types of things. So we're not saying that the entire review commission should have this type of expertise, but there probably should be somebody on the commission who's familiar with reviewing the application itself and not just authorize or not just operating a school. The language regarding contracting with a college or a university to provide technical support and to be the administrator, we think that's rather limiting. All of the expertise in the state is with the people who are actually doing the authorizing right now. And so there's not a lot of experience or expertise with the community, or with the state colleges and the universities. And so we would like to see that language expanded so that if you're gonna do the commission, they should be able to contract with anybody who had that experience to make sure that we have the experience, someone experienced who's going to make sure we get the most high-quality charter schools. Our authorizers are always trying to make sure that we're putting schools in place that are going to have a chance to be academically successful and that are going to be able to financially support their students when the schools open. So, unfortunately, we do oppose the commission under the model that's proposed here, and we appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. That is all of the... But that is all the public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the amendment. In debate? Seeing none. Representative, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you. I would like to ask everyone to kind of look, if you would, at number 4, line 38 of the amendment, which actually says that within 3 calendar days after an applicant submits an application for a charter school to the commission, the applicant must also provide a copy of the application to the school district in which the proposed charter will be located. And within 30 calendar days, after receiving a copy of the application, the school district may provide input to the commission on a form prescribed by the department. And the commission must consider such input in reviewing the application. Thereby, we do have the local LEA that would be the sponsor of the proposed charter school having input at the time of the submission.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, so the amendment adopted. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 094837.
Thank you, sir. This amendment basically stated, is an interlocal agreement entered into by a school district for the development of only its own schools, including provisions relating to the extension or infrastructure may be used by charter schools. Very simply, if there is an interlocal agreement between a municipality and a school district, that the charter school located within that district also have access to the same interlocal agreement.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions? Are there questions on this amendment? Representative Hunstrofsky, you're recognized for any questions.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to clarify, so if the charter schools would be part of the interlocal agreement, that means the municipalities can also use the charter schools for summer camps. Would they also be able to use it for hurricanes as a place, a hurricane shelter, just like they do with the traditional public schools that are part of the interlocal agreement?
Recognized.
Thank you. I don't know if the for shelter purposes, because that all depends on the building code and requirements by the building. So I'm not really sure if a charter school meeting that could, but if it did, it possibly could enter into that. As far as use, that's something that there are municipal charter schools that are used locally for those purposes.
Members, in question? Is there public testimony on the amendment? No, there is none. Is there debate? Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive close.
Are there objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 338299.
Thank you, sir. This amendment, barcode 338299, simply stated, would allow for the transfer of an operator at a municipal charter, municipally run charter school to be transferred over to another operator.
Members, are there questions on this amendment? Any questions? Is there public testimony? There is. Andrina Figueroa. Thank you. That is all the testimony that we have. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive close.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Without question, the amendment is adopted. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 465071.
Thank you, sir. This amendment touches on a couple of different things. Number one, it does relate to extensions of infrastructure that may be used by charter schools. So in that sense, it is a bit related to the previous amendment. It also touches upon something called the teacher salary allocation. And it would provide that the teacher salary allocation would not be subject to any currently standard as the 5% administrative fee by a LEA or a local school district.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Is there any public testimony on the amendment? Chris Moya? Thank you. That is all the public testimony. Is there a debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to close on the on your amendment.
I waive closer.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 459317.
Thank you, sir. This amendment was formerly known as HB 609, carried by our colleague and esteemed representative, a member of this astute body before me here today, Representative Barrero, otherwise known as the Florida Institute for Center Innovation, which I might add passed unanimously. And with great fanfare and applause. And that is the amendment, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions on this amendment? Any questions? Seeing none, is there Representative Lamarca, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Representative. How would you tell between great fanfare and just regular fanfare?
You're recognized to explain fanfare.
There was a lot of smiling when I saw the air applause. That's what it was. I was sitting right over here when it happened. That's the difference.
Follow up. There is public testimony. Wendy Dodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wendy Dodge again, Polk County Schools. But in addition to my job at Polk County Schools, I'm also a member of FACSA, which is the Florida Association of Charter School Authorizers. And my colleagues have asked me today to come up and talk to you about what they do because it's very similar to what's going on here in this amendment and with the Institute. So Florida Charter School Authorizers, FACSA, have been supporting authorizers in Florida since 2003, and its membership consists of 31 of the 47 school districts who are currently authorizing and supporting charter schools within their districts. FACSA currently provides sharing of best practices, technical assistance, professional development, mentoring and partnerships, networking opportunities to Florida's authorizers. We collaborate with FDOE and the Charter School Support Unit. And we also receive state and federal grants to provide training, conduct research, and partnership with other state authorizers. Our members follow and assisted in the development of Florida's best practices for district authorizing, which are modeled on the national best practices established by NACSA, which is the national association. We participate in the State Charter School Conference each year and are members of the National Network for District Authorizing, which is a multi-state collaboration of authorizers devoted to sharing of best practices and improvements in authorizing in each of our states. So our members serve as external authorizers for other states and other authorizing entities around the country, and we are collectively considered the experts in the field. So I shared all that with you because in subparagraph 2, the requirements of A, B, C, D, E, and G are already, that's something that FACSA already does and we've been doing for the last 19 years. So the only thing different that this institute would be doing would be paragraph F, which is supporting the needs of charter schools and providing best practices for charter school teachers. So we would say that this is maybe a duplication of what an already longstanding group is doing, and if maybe this institute would focus on the support of charter schools and charter school teachers, that's probably a need that we have in this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dodge. Christian Camara. That is all of the public testimony. Members, we are in we're in debate. Representative, you recognize Barrero. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you,
Slipped
Mr.
my
Chair.
Mind for a second. I was thinking about fanfare. Sorry.
Yeah, I would love to continue adding additional fanfare for accepting this amendment and carrying this issue forward, Representative Rizzo. I just wanted to state that the language that is being proposed today is very good language. It gives the ability for Miami-Dade College to continue to support charter schools, continue to move forward with innovation and best practices, and make Florida just a great state for school choice. So thank you for carrying forward this amendment.
Members in debate. Okay, are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, so the amendment adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended, and now we'll move into public testimony. Are there appearance cards? There are. Chris Moya? Thank you. Christian Camara? Davis Drews? Thank you. That is all of the public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Is there any debate? Is there any debate, members? Seeing none, Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to close.
This is a great bill, and again, I would ask that members look at everything, this bill on the whole, okay? And again, let's look at the very first thing I talked about as to what this bill will do. And it will establish legislative intent that charter school students be considered as important as all other students in the state. And that really is the crux of this bill. With that, I close, sir.
Thank you, Representative Rizzo. Missy, would you please call the roll?
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Arrington?
No.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Stein?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Hanshofsky?
No.
Lamarca?
With great fanfare, yes.
Maney?
Yes, ma'am.
Mariano?
Yes.
McCurdy?
No.
Morales?
No.
Cabalsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Was that a yes?
Yes.
Yes. Williams?
No.
Latvala?
Yes.
Chair McClain?
Yes.
16 yeas, 5 nays.
Members, by your vote, CS for HB 865 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Where are we going? 70, what? 51. Thank you. Members, now we'll move into House Bill 7051 by Representative Mariano, post-secondary education. Representative Mariano, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members. Today, I have before you House Bill 7051. This bill contains measures that will assist in post-secondary education affordability, provide informed consumer choice to our students as they pursue higher education, provide transparency to the articulation process, and foster innovation among our institutions by allowing our institutions to choose an accreditor. This bill subjects any Florida college system institution or state university proposal or action to increase a fee to a supermajority vote, requires each Florida college system institution and state university to prominently post all tuition and fees as well as any proposed changes to their respective websites in an area that is transparent and easily accessible in email to all enrolled students. In addition, any proposed changes to a fee must include an explanation of how they are currently expended. Current law requires lists of required and recommended textbooks and instructional materials to be posted at least 45 days before the first day of class for each term. The bill also requires the posting of course syllabi for general education courses to be posted 45 days before the first day of class. In addition, the bill requires these materials to remain posted for 5 years, be searchable by course subject, number, title, name of instructor, title of the author of each assigned textbook, and be easily downloadable by current and prospective students. Adding the syllabi as a requirement for general education classes is a huge step forward for our students. From personal experience, recommended textbooks are often not utilized in the course, and the syllabus is where students can actually see what materials are needed for a course and ensures they do not purchase textbooks that are not necessary for the course. This bill also requires post-secondary institutions participating in the statewide course numbering system to accept and apply general education courses and credit as first satisfying general education core course credit requirements and other general education subject area course credit requirements before applying them as electives. As it relates to accreditation, this bill prohibits a state college or state university from being accredited by the same accrediting agency or association for consecutive accreditation cycles and requires state colleges and state universities to seek and obtain accreditation from an accrediting agency other than their current accrediting agency. This change is a result of the update of federal regulations. In 2020, the USDOE revised federal regulations to remove the traditional geographic boundaries of the accreditation process, allowing for institutions, if authorized by their state, to pursue the accreditor of their choice. Different accrediting agencies focus on different metrics when accrediting institutions, and this bill will allow our institutions to pursue accreditors that prioritize student outcomes, as we do here in Florida. In order to protect our institutions, this bill also provides a cause of action against an accrediting agency or association by a post-secondary education institution that has been negatively impacted by retaliatory action taken against that institution by an accrediting agency or association. That is the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Mariana. Are there questions on the bill? Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you, Rep. Mariana. I understand there's a number of accrediting agencies that do this. Can you give me some insight? I don't know if you know, because you don't work for SACS, but how does their accreditation process compare to the other six accrediting agencies around the country?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And while USDOE does have requirements for any agency to be an accreditor, there are different studies out there. One that I've been referencing is from the Center for American Progress that demonstrates SACs in comparison to others that show they do not prioritize student outcomes in the same way.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
You're recognized.
So, and maybe there's someone here that can answer this later in public testimony, so I'm being premature, but, I mean, have they given you any reason why, you know, they're better than or worse than the others now that there's competition, or maybe it's a question better asked of them, assuming they're here?
Thank you, Chair. I would love to hear from them today. I'm not sure I see anyone in the audience. They did present in the Senate Appropriations Committee last week, so maybe they'll be here.
Okay, I'll save my questions then, if they're here.
Any other questions? Representative Valdez.
Thank you, Chair Latvala, and thank you, Rep. Mariano. So my question is, let's say you have a collegiate academy in a high school setting, and then the collegiate academy they would normally receive an AA degree from the junior college. And let's say there's two different accrediting agencies between the high school collegiate academy, once the child gets their AA degree and they matriculate over to their local university that might have a different accrediting agency, what would happen then?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My bill does not impact that process. You can transfer from institution to institution. It does not matter who your accrediting agency is. That's why we have common course numbering systems here in the state of Florida, so our students have the ability to transfer to different institutions, and in that case, matriculate into different institutions.
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand correctly, if there's two different sets of criterion that they're looking at, it wouldn't matter?
Thank you, Chair. Who's they? Can you be more specific?
They meaning that degree that child has earned after graduating from high school in the AA degree, right? And that particular, they were accredited under base different criterion. That AA degree would be acceptable to that other university?
You're recognized.
Thanks, Chair. So if you want to understand the accreditation process, it's kind of like an academic audit. So these are agencies that are going in and making sure the institutions are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And this process would not, changing an accreditor would not impact the matriculation of a student from one institution to another because of the processes we have in place in statute for articulation agreements.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm trying to really understand for the student's perspective. So let's say currently some private colleges, because of their accreditation, their credits or their credential would not matriculate over to a public university and or public college because of the accredited, they're not accredited. That's what I'm really more concerned about in this example that I'm sharing. So that's what I'm trying to understand. I don't want to hurt students, right, from obtaining their ability to matriculate. So in that scenario that has currently happened, when you have two institutions with two different accrediting agencies and the lack of matriculation, I believe that would hurt the child.
Thank you, Chair. Anyone that knows me knows my number one priority in this process is focusing on students. And so I don't think that is a scenario that is accurate in any way. If you look at transferring from a private institution in the state of Florida, currently accredited by SACS, to a public institution accredited in the state of Florida by SACS, you're going to lose credits more times than not, and that has nothing to do with the accreditation process. That is the institution itself recognizing the coursework and what it's going to take. The accreditation process, the ones that they're going to be having to select from are approved by the United States Department of Education, and they have hefty requirements in order to be an accrediting agency. These are not going to be any fly-by-night accrediting agencies. These are reputable agencies that they're going to have to choose from, and it's going to have no impact on transferring from one school to another. If you look at right now, and because of it, previously, these regional accreditors were regionally based. You could not go into a different region. But let's say if you want to transfer from University of Florida to Stanford, I mean, that's a different accreditor at Stanford. And those, you can still transfer those things. That's about the institutions approving your academic courses, not about your accrediting agency in any way.
Any other questions? All right, there are three amendments. Representative Mariana, you're recognized to explain Amendment 337267.
Thanks, Chair. After feedback from the bookstores, this amendment revises the portion of the bill related to the posting of textbook and instructional materials by requiring such information be also be searchable by academic term, department, course number, course section, and the name of the instructor of the course, as well as the ISBN. The amendment reduces the amount of time such information must be posted from 5 years to 4 years. And finally, the amendment requires course syllabi for all upper-level courses be posted by the 2024-2025 academic year.
Are there questions on the amendment? Is there any public testimony on the amendment? There's none on the amendment. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Mariana, you recognize the close on your amendment. Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment is adopted. Representative Mariana, you are recognized to explain Amendment 259545.
Thank you, Chair. In order to take a more deliberate approach and increase collaboration, the amendment requires the Board of Governors and State Board of Education to identify and determine the best accreditors for our state universities and state colleges. That is the amendment.
Are there questions on the amendment? Is there any public testimony on the amendment? There is none. Is there a debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Mariano, you recognize the close on
it. Wave close.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment is adopted. Representative Mariano, you are recognized to explain Amendment 487391.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment revises the bill's effective date as a result of the requirement of the Board and Governors and State Board of Education to determine the best accreditors for our state universities and state colleges by July 1st, 2022.
Are questions on the amendments? Is there any public testimony on the amendment? There is none. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative Mariano, you recognize the close on the amendment?
Wave close.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended, and we do have some public appearance cards. Will Hanley. Welcome, you are recognized.
Hello. Good afternoon, representatives. I want to speak to you about the accreditation portion of this bill. I'm speaking as a faculty member, and I want to talk to you about some of the ways I see it impacting the work that I do. Two quick points. The first point is that that universities in Florida and elsewhere exist in a national marketplace for faculty and for students. I spent 45 minutes this morning working to convince a student to come to our department rather than the Ivy League departments where he's been accepted for his PhD. This is a normal part of our work. Now, in persuading people to come here as opposed to somewhere else in the country or the world, stability and predictability are a really important part of what we have to offer. And I'm concerned that the forced change of accreditors is going to affect the promise of stability and predictability that I can make to students and to future colleagues that we're attempting to recruit. If I can be indulged in a football comparison for a moment here, you know, in football recruiting, you talk to people and say, oh, you know, come and play in the ACC. It's going to be great. You know who you're going to be playing with. You know the stadiums you're going to be playing in. Except we're only going to play in the ACC for 2 years. And, you know, by the time you're a junior, we're going to be in a different league. You know, maybe the Pac-10. I'm not really sure what league it'll be. But come and play at Florida State. That's a similar situation to the situation we're seeing here. It's injecting a lot of instability and unpredictability, which is difficult for us aiming to do our job of attracting the best people in a national marketplace. So the second point I want to make is about work allocation in our job. You know, compliance and accountability are important, and they're hard work. And accreditation involves really a lot of work for everybody at universities, faculty members. We all spend a lot of time working on the metrics that are necessary for accountability. Now, one good aspect of keeping the same accreditor is that the institution develops some institutional knowledge, and we find efficiencies because we understand how the systems work. We all spend a lot of time preparing for accreditation, going through accreditation, but at least we know the systems in place. If we are to change accreditors, that means learning a new system each time as well, and that imposes an additional burden, takes away time that we want to be spending teaching or doing research. We'll be spending it working on figuring out new accreditation systems, and the institutions are going to have to hire new staff to do a lot of that administrative work. So this is going to impose a burden which is going to take away from the work that we do with students and as researchers. So those are the two points that I want to make from my faculty perspective on what this forced accreditation change would mean for us. Thank you for your attention.
I think we may have a question. Representative Fine, did you want to be recognized?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. When did you learn who your accreditor was at the university where you teach?
Well, I understand how universities work. I've known it from the time that I came here in 2008, that this is a Sachs-accredited institution. I know this because it's a normal part of our everyday work to prepare statistics for Sachs. For instance, you're interested in the details of this, so I can get deep in the details if you like. I teach a capstone seminar for honors for students in the major that I teach in. There's a component of that capstone seminar which is broken out put into the statistics that we supply for Sachs. So, you know, any faculty member knows what Sachs stuff is because it's part of our day-to-day work.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know that my father was a professor at the University of Kentucky for more than 20 years. He had no idea who their accreditor was. So I guess my next question is, do you think that University of Michigan and West Point are good entities, are good universities?
Well, obviously, the point that I was making is not about the relative merits of different accreditors, but about the issue of being forced to change accreditors. Those are two separate issues.
Well,
you recognize.
I guess my question is why would, I mean, look, forever, we were only able to use one, and now we're able to use any of them or you know, get some variety because there are these multiple ones out there. And why is the idea of having options if you want to be accredited by the one that does the University of Michigan or Harvard or Stanford, none of them use the same accreditor. I mean, I don't understand if they're good enough for Harvard, Stanford, or the University of Michigan, why couldn't they be good enough for a Florida university?
As I've already said, the issue is not with any of the accreditors in particular. It's about being compelled to change accreditors and the costs involved with the compulsion to change accreditors. That's the concern that I have.
Last question.
Yes, sir.
As a faculty member, just your guess, what percentage of your time do you believe that you spend, you know, every X number of years when you have to do this? In the entirety of that several-year cycle of your time, do you spend working on accreditation issues? Is it 50%, 75% of your time on accreditation, 33%, 25%? Of the 2,000 hours that you work a year over the times, however many years the accreditation it takes place. Let's say it's 3 years, 6,000 hours. How many of those hours are you spending working on accreditation issues right now with SACS?
You're recognized.
Well, I'm not sure about your father's work, but if I spent 2,000 hours on my job, I'd be a very happy man. I spend far more than that on my job. If I were to spend 75% of my time on SACS accreditation, I would quit my job. I would say that I probably spend, 5 hours a year on this question, but I would say that I don't occupy a position of leadership within my department or within my college. So you're looking at, 1,500 faculty members spending 5 hours each as a minimum. But if you were to talk to any chair of the department when they do the studies, every 5 or 10 years, this occupies a month of the time of the chair, as well as the staff, the administrative staff in each department, in each program. So it's for a rank and file faculty member like myself, I would say I'm looking at maybe 5 hours, but it's a much larger burden for those who occupy administrative positions.
Sure.
You're recognized.
Thank you. My dad was the chair of a department at the University of Kentucky. So let's say you don't work 2,000 hours. You're working 60-hour weeks and not 40-hour weeks, so you're working 3,000 hours, and we thank you, by the way, for that extra 1,000 hours that you're working a year. So 3,000 hours, of which 5 hours a year is focused on this accreditation stuff. So this change, if it tripled the amount of work that you had to do, which I don't even know that it would, just a simple change, it would go from 5 to 15 hours a year out of the 3,000 hours that you're working every year, just to set the math there, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, I'm good.
Whip Andrade, do you have a question? Okay, thank you very much for being here. Nicole Morse. You are recognized. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. My name is Nicole Morse. I'm a faculty member at Florida Atlantic University, and I am really concerned about the accreditation portion of this bill. Since 2019, we have had the option to switch accreditors, so that is already available to all of the universities and colleges in Florida. One of the reasons many have not decided to change is because SACS is such a good and highly respected accreditor, and it's part of the way that we validate that our degrees are extremely good, and we know that the Florida higher education system is one of the best. So the option is available to switch if schools feel that that is in their best interests. As the previous speaker said, the amount of time and effort that goes into accreditation does vary based on someone's job, but it is a very involved process. As a director of a program, when we went through program review, it was about 2 months of my time to go through that process alone. Recently, in the last 2 years, Florida Atlantic University has been preparing for our accreditation, and we've been going through the process of creating quality enhancement programs, which are part of the SACS accreditation process. So that involved different teams of faculty designing, proposing, and entering into a competitive process to choose which quality enhancement program we would develop. That process, for my colleagues who were involved in it, again, was a many months effort of at least 5 to 10 hours a week to actually design and propose these. And that's only the quality enhancement program portion of accreditation. So this process is incredibly involved, but it's incredibly valuable because it's how we make sure that our degrees are respected. And then on the other hand, it's how we make sure that we're taking care of our students. Accreditation is what allows students to access financial aid. It's what allows students to transfer between institutions. And I would say, as a higher education professional, the description of transferring that we received earlier is not accurate. Transferring credits depends strongly on the relationship between accrediting bodies. And for my institution, Florida Atlantic University, we have a lot of students who get their AA degrees at Broward College and other local community colleges. And it is very easy for them to transfer into a four-year program because we all have the same accrediting agency, which is one of the reasons that I believe many of Florida's schools have chosen to stay with SACS since the 2019 DOA decision enabled them to change if they should so choose. So I'll just conclude by saying that having a high-quality accreditor really is central to the excellence of our education system, and I'm particularly concerned that with the possibility of action, legal action being taken against accreditors, as well as the requirement to continually switch accreditors, we might reach a point where certain Florida schools will not be able to find accreditors. As a professor who is extremely proud to teach and work here in the state of Florida, that would be horrific. We would lose the ability to validate our degrees. Our students would lose the ability to say to the world that they have received a first-class education here in Florida. And I really hope that you will vote against this bill.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
I have a question, if that's okay. Or if you want to keep it, fine.
Yeah. Rep. Mariano, you're recognized for a question, then I'll go to you.
Thank you for your testimony. You referenced that because Sachs is so well-respected, we should stay in Sachs. How many institutions since this regional geographic boundary has been unlocked have transferred into Sachs since it is so well-respected?
You're recognized.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think in general, I want to be clear that I'm speaking against the idea of being required to continually switch accreditors, not necessarily in favor of Sachs specifically.
Well, your testimony spoke to the reason you wanted to stay was because Sachs was so well respected. And if you could also go into more on the transferring credits, how do our state articulation agreement not impact the ability or allow for these transferring from the Broward College specifically to FAU?
Well, you're speaking about a hypothetical situation if the bill is in place where potentially schools would have different accreditors, and that's what I'm concerned about. That's something that does introduce a certain amount of additional difficulty evaluating transfer credits from programs that have a different accreditor. Does take a lot more time. There's a lot of risk that some credits won't transfer. Right now, what I see is that it's extremely easy to transfer between our AA degrees and our BA programs because we have the same accreditor.
Follow up? So where in statute does it reference in our articulation agreements in the example that you provided from Broward College to FAU that the reason they are able to do that articulation agreement is because they are both accredited by Sachs?
Oh, I don't believe that it says that. What I'm speaking to is the fact that different accreditors have different standards, so it would involve a more lengthy, and it does involve a more lengthy evaluation when a student is transferring from a school that has a different accreditor.
Follow up?
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
But in the example you provided, those agreements are articulated by the state. How would a different accrediting agency, as long as they are approved by USDOE, impede on our ability to have articulation agreements between our state institutions?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I believe I've answered the question. You know, in my experience, when students are transferring credits that are with a different accreditor, it just is a much longer and more complex process.
Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said in your comments the importance of having a high-quality accreditor. There are six others other than Sachs that people can use. Which of those six are not high-quality accreditors?
I believe they are all high-quality. I believe, as I said before, the problem is with being forced to repeatedly change accrediting institutions, not with choosing different ones.
Thank you. Can I follow up?
Yes, sir.
That wasn't your testimony. You said you talked about the importance and your worry that folks would go with a non-high-quality accreditor. I appreciate you correcting that. The second thing that you said is you said, look, it takes a lot of time to get prepared for these accreditations. And you talked about all the time that you have to spend getting ready for the Sachs accreditation. How much more time do you know, let's say that you went to the one that accredits Harvard or West Point or Stanford or MIT, all these apparently ones we have to be worried about, how much more time would it take you? Because it sounds like the one you're doing right now, is it Do you know, 5%, 10%, or is that just a guess?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I understand your question, and I would like to say, I think for me, one of the reasons I emphasized SACS in my testimony is because my institution is familiar with that process, so it does make it a lot more efficient. For me, when I came in as the director of the program that I direct, I am an assistant professor, so I'm junior. I'm in my fourth year. And because of that, I didn't have a lot of institutional knowledge. But a number of faculty mentors who are senior to me in the school do know SACS very well. And so they were able to provide a lot of guidance and advice and support. Nonetheless, it still, as I mentioned, took up an enormous amount of time. If those people that I had been relying on to help me understand the process were also trying to learn the process themselves, it would have taken much more time, and the prospect of error or other delays would have been a big concern. And so because, you know, ultimately our priority is being able to teach, that raises a huge concern for me.
Last follow-up.
Yes, sir.
But what I hear is it takes a long time today. You don't know how these other processes work. So for all you know, with the one that accredits Harvard or Stanford, they're all different. You don't know. It could take less time to go through the accreditation process. It's different, but you don't actually know. You're going to have to learn a new system, but you don't know the actual amount of time would be more or less or anything else. It's just a different process. You've got no idea that it's going to be double the time or half the time or five times the time or 50% of the time. You just don't know. It's just new.
Yes, it would be learning a new Thanks. System.
Thank you for being here. Dr. Rich Templin, Florida AFL-CIO. You are recognized. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Half the reason I'm here is just to have the opportunity to appear before your committee, because we haven't had a chance to do this yet, this session.
I'm looking forward to it. And I remember your testimony from last week in Commerce, but when you actually supported one of our good bills, but I won't put you on the spot about that, since it was, so are you speaking, or I guess you're not speaking in support of this bill?
No, unfortunately. The Florida AFL-CIO, and we represent all types of sectors of the university community, not just faculty, so I'm here speaking for them a little bit as well. Our concern is also on the accreditation piece. There's been a lot of questions and a lot of words. What everybody is kind of conveniently not addressing, this isn't about choice in the bill. There's no choice in the bill. Yeah, the federal government has said universities and colleges can choose an accreditor not in the region. That's true. This bill is not giving anybody the choice. The choice already exists. You're forcing universities to change their accreditor. That's not choice. That's not part of the freedom session. It's a compulsion. And we have to ask why. Why would there be this compulsion, since we know that the schools in Florida are under one accrediting agency? Why the compulsion? I'm sure there's a lot of reasons for that. If the reason is to create chaos, which you've heard a little bit about, this bill will do that. If the reason is to enter doubt into these processes, this bill will do that. But I can tell you, this bill will not have a single positive change on our universities. You know, I've been doing this a long time. And this is the first time since I've done this over the last couple years that our universities are the number one in the nation. We're number one in the nation. And yet I have seen more bills filed to mess with higher education Florida than in the 20 years I've been here. I don't understand it. Everything's working, and yet everybody comes along with another idea to try to fix what's already working. I sometimes wonder if it's to break something instead of fix something that's already working, because that makes a lot more sense. There are a lot of pieces to this bill, but this piece on accreditation should be removed. It's going to create inefficiencies. It's going to waste money. It's going to create doubt. It's going to be another block on the reputation of our colleges and universities, and no one has given you a compelling reason as to why to do it. The only reason they have given you is that the federal government has changed and now you can choose an accrediting agency. But that's not what the bill does. It forces every university to change. Why? What is the compelling reason to break something that's functioning as well as it is? Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We encourage you to vote no if there's a way to get that portion out. We look forward to working with you on the other elements of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe there's a question. Whip Andrade.
Thank you, Chair. My question is focused mainly initially on the inefficiencies referenced. Is it your understanding that accrediting agencies around the country in response to the opening up of the ability to accredit universities and colleges in other regions haven't prepared for those inefficiencies and addressed them, you know, in certain circumstances, like a streamlined process for universities and colleges that have been accredited for more than 10 years?
You're recognized.
My contention is, again, this bill does not deal with the new choice that is offered by the federal government. This is a mandate, number one. Number two, efficiencies come in many ways. But one of the major ways that you can create efficiency is to create long-standing relationships. And those relationships that our universities currently have with their accrediting agency don't need to get scrapped every 5 years. That is inefficient. I think we could all logically agree with that.
Yes, sir, you recognize.
Is it your official statement that the universities in the state of Florida are perfect and have no room for improvement?
You're recognized.
Well, only one person I know or system has been perfect, and that was my mom, and she's no longer with us.
No further questions.
All right. Well, I guess the back and forth between Representative Fine and Dr. Templin would be fun for the last meeting. You're recognized, sir.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I only have a couple of questions. Which one of the six accrediting agencies are we forcing these universities to use since we're forcing them to do something they don't want to do? Which of the six are we making them choose?
You're right.
The bill does not specify which of the six. However, it still is a compulsory change with no real compelling reason that's been offered as to date.
Follow up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it's not fair to say there's no choice. They get to choose which of the six. You also talked about doing this would be a blot on their reputation. So would a Florida university being accredited by the same accrediting agency that accredits Stanford be a blot on their reputation?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Recognized.
Thank you. Not at all. What I'm referring to is we've had a lot of very high-profile issues over the last couple of years, which continually show some in the Florida legislature injecting themselves into higher education for non-academic reasons.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You. Follow-ups. Okay, so I just want to give you the chance to clarify your testimony. You said doing this, forcing them to make a choice to use one of the other six, again, ones that by the way, Sachs does not accredit any of the top seven or eight universities in the country. So having them be forced to go to the best schools, be accredited with the best schools in the country, I'm trying to understand which one of those choices, having to choose one of the six, would be a blot on their reputation, whether it's Harvard, which is one, Stanford, which is one, University of Chicago, which is one, Georgetown, which is one. I'm trying to understand where accrediting with one of the five best universities in the country would be a blot on their reputation, because that's what you said this would force them to do.
You're recognized.
Again, clarifying my testimony, that was not my testimony at all. My testimony is that this is an outside the academic entity forcing a change that may be in response to high-profile issues. And we have seen a lot of that in our colleges and universities. I think we can all agree with that, whatever side of those issues that we've been on. And when we talk about choice, you ask, well, which one would we choose? If I were to go and had some kind of legal power and I were to go and talk to one of your constituents and tell your constituent, you have to get rid of that car. You have to get rid of that car. And your constituent were to say to me, but I like my car. There's nothing wrong with my car. Oh, but you can pick any other car you want, but you have to get rid of that car. I don't think that you would be supportive of that.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Mariano.
Thank you. And so just one, I guess, two clarifying things to part of what you said. So USDOE, when they opened it up to be able to move, you said that currently our institutions have a choice now to move. Are you aware that in our statute, there is reference to SACs tied to ad valorem tax exemptions? So you're saying that even though they would lose out on that funding if they were to leave now, that this part of this bill that changes that is not necessary?
You recognize.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am aware of that there are places in statute that are tied to the specific accrediting agency. But again, there could be an easy fix to this bill to alter that and allow our colleges and universities to choose. That's not what this bill does. The bill forces all of our colleges and universities to leave their current accrediting agency. And the question we have to ask is why?
Do you have a follow-up? All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Matthew Latta. Thank you for being here. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm speaking as someone who's been working at Florida State for 22 years now. I'm proud of that. I hope I provided the taxpayers some service. And like the other speakers, I have a problem with the accreditation issue. We've had three cycles at my time at FSU, and although I'm not heavily involved in it, every faculty member is to a certain extent. This bill, of course, requires every institution to change their accrediting agency. But there are problems with that. You can't just flip a switch and move over to another agency. The process of applying to an agency to be accredited is a whole other level of application than the accreditation itself. There's no rule that says that accrediting agency must accept a Florida institution or any other institution. And in fact, the portion of this bill that encourages institutions to sue their accrediting agencies if they exercise due diligence and maybe come down with a ruling that cost the institution some money, if I'm running an accrediting agency, I'm going to think twice before I want to do business with a Florida institution when they're already holding the threat of a lawsuit over my head. So what happens if you can't get another accrediting agency and you are required by statute to find one? Either you accept a very low-quality national agency or you lose your accreditation. And of course, if you lose your accreditation, we know what happens. Students lose their Pell Grants. Thousands of students cannot continue with their educations. Students who are already here will have to take credits elsewhere, out of state, excuse me, for their degrees to be recognized. Tens of millions of dollars of federal grants and research money will be lost. Future degrees from that institution would be invalidated. And even if an institution does not lose its accreditation status, the reputation and value of a degree from a Florida higher education institute would plummet. Industries might think twice about settling here. Our world-class colleges and universities would fail to attract the best and brightest. These are not political talking points, though. These are facts. It has taken years and years of work by the Board of Governors, the Boards of Trustees, administrations, donors, faculty, students, the legislature on behalf of the citizens of Florida to build our university system into what has been recognized as the best in the country. Two of our top schools, as you know, are in the top 20 of all public institutions. This bill is threatening that legacy with no discernible reason for it. It threatens our national standing. Please vote against this bill, support our higher education system, and for continuing our march to excellence. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Rep. Mariana, do you have a quick question?
Yep, thank you, Chair. Not to rehash anything that we've previously done with other speakers, but you mentioned a risk of another accreditor not choosing us because there's no rule for them to have to accept us. Is there a rule for SACs to have to accept us?
No.
And so why do you think Sachs accepts our institutions?
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry, ma'am.
Why do you think Sachs accepts our institutions?
Sachs accepts our institution because that they've been doing it for many years, and we provided no reason for them not to.
Not because of the quality of our... Yes, Chair.
You recognize?
They don't accept us because of the quality of our institutions. It's because it just happened for a long time.
You recognize?
Sachs supports us because we are a high-quality institution. I don't quite understand the question.
Representative Fine, did you have a question? Okay, Artie. Thank you, sir.
I'm disappointed. Thank you.
I can. Up to you, Chair.
Of all our high-quality institutions in Florida, none is higher than the great University of Central Florida. Members, is there a debate? Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And, you know, my questions are not in reference to the intent of the bill sponsor. Never was. I know where your heart is, Representative Mariano. And it pains me that you have to say that if anybody knows you, because we do know you, and I appreciate that of you all the time. My biggest concern is on lines, we talk about the accreditation, which is on lines 153 through 155, and I shall read it. It says, accreditation, a public post-secondary education institution may not be accredited by the same accrediting agency or association for consecutive accreditation cycles. This is the part that gives me a little bit of pause, because I have seen instances where students have not been accepted to colleges and universities because of that. And there's different standards. If they were to all have the same standards, it'd be a different story. The fact that we are telling them in statute that we may not be accredited by the same accrediting agency, that's what brings me pause, because there is no choice. The universities could choose, if they wanted to change and stay with another accrediting agency. But this part of the bill is not giving universities that choice. And again, the articulation agreements in districts with junior colleges to then move on to a university in the local area might have an unintended consequence for the student. So the intent is the implementation of the policy is where I have most pause, of which we at the legislature do not have control over rules. We have the overarching rule, and we state what the law, and then we state what the intent is, and then the department promulgates the rules to enact the piece of legislation. And this is where it brings me pause. So because of that, and in my experience as a board member in K-12 silo of education and helping students matriculate into higher learning, it brings me severe pause and concern that might have a ripple effect. And we heard from some of the speakers some of the ripple effects that it would have for our most neediest students that would qualify for the Pell Grant. And if they have to go out of state to be able to finish their degree, you know that there's going to be out-of-state tuitions that are going to be much higher than an in-state tuition. And then there's not going to be any funding available to the students. That's why I had the conversation with you in the question answer of trying to figure out where that balance would be, because I can't figure that balance out because of my experience as a school board member, not because of your intent, my friend. It's not about that at all. So for that reason, this particular line, those three lines really, really bring me to pause, in which I can't support this because of the fact of the unintended consequences that it may have to students like me when I was a kid and couldn't afford to go to college when I wanted to go to college. And I can't. I have to look out for kids that look like me. And this would definitely, I think, would bring a pause for me. And I, for that reason only, I cannot support this bill today. Thank you.
Representative Fine in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And look, I think what we're just hearing is a fear of change. Let me dispel some notions. Very few of these folks had heard of their accrediting agency before these kinds of things come up. I told you, I asked my father about this, who chaired a department at the University of Kentucky for many years. I actually did I did higher ed appropriations for 2 years, and I'd never even heard of it until actually one of our colleagues got appointed to the SACS board and by the way, quit after going to one meeting. Wasn't all that interested in the topic. We've heard, oh, this is going to take a lot of time, and then, well, it only takes 5 hours. We've heard it's going to be a blot on their reputation, and then, well, none of these are bad. Look, they're all good. All seven of these accrediting agencies are good. Randy can't just go and create an accrediting agency and say, come and hire me. You've got to use one of these seven. What this fundamentally is about is change. And I will tell you, I was offended by one of the comments that said, you know, you politicians should stay out of higher education and you don't know what you're doing and let us do whatever we want. I would argue that the reason we're the number one system in the country is because of the politicians that have interjected themselves. It wasn't the universities that came up with performance funding for universities, it was this legislature, and that incented them to be better. It wasn't the universities that came up with preeminence funding that incented them to be better, it was the politicians in this legislature, and that helped them get better. It wasn't the universities that came up with Bright Futures, which, by the way, creates a magnet for the best and brightest students in Florida to stay in Florida. It was this legislature. You know, we fund their buildings, we fund their schools, and frankly, we hold them accountable when they break the rules. That's what we do here. So the last thing I'll say is, I will tell you one story. It's not a story about me, unfortunately, but it's a story of when I was higher ed chair. I met with one of the presidents of the universities. I met with them all. And one of them said, you know, we're at X ranking. I don't want to reveal which president it was. And he said, look, it's my goal to be number one. And I said, number one public university? He said, no, number one university. We want to beat your university, where you went. And I listed all of the reasons that I thought that would be impossible, out of pride, if nothing else. But the fact of the matter is, by allowing, SACS does not accredit the 5 best schools in the country. They don't accredit most of the 25 and 50 best schools in the country. And by making people go out and get accredited by the accreditors that accredit Stanford, by accredit the University of Chicago, that accredit MIT, that accredit Harvard, that accredit, you know, this great schools that you exist in Texas, and you can pick many more. By making them do that, that will be one more thing that we politicians have done that make these universities get better. So change is good. It keeps people on their toes, and I'm very grateful that Chair Mariano is bringing this great bill forward.
Ranking Member Williams in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because we're not giving the schools a choice, we're making this more of a dictatorship. Because of a dictatorship, being in the state of Florida, I will be down on this bill this time.
Any other members wishing to debate? Seeing none, Representative Mariano, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, for your indulgence today. Look, change is scary, and anytime you try to put change on any organization, any institution, there's going to be fear of the repercussions. I have had my door open since the beginning. When I first started working on this bill, I make sure I sat down with an expert on accreditation and specifically SACS accreditation, so I knew what the process looked like and to make sure there would be no negative impact on our students, because that is the most important thing to me as a chair of higher ed and in this policy area that is my favorite policy area. And so as I've been working on this, you know, Representative Valdez, no one has brought to me any concerns on the impacts of articulation agreements. If there was, you would have bet there was an amendment today to resolve it. And please, you know, as you're considering voting for this bill, just because there is fear of what may happen, if we do not do what we have to do to help improve our institutions and bring them to the next level. Like, the original purpose for this USDOE change was to help foster innovation amongst our universities and to give them and give the accrediting agencies a reason to improve their processes. And when we have the best institutions, the best system in the country going to find new accreditors, that is only going to up the playing field for every institution across the United States. So when you vote for this bill today, I would appreciate you thinking about why it's the best thing to do for our students and for our system that is the best in the state of Florida. Appreciate all your support.
Thank you, Rep. Mariano. Missy, please call the roll.
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Arrington?
No.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Michelson?
No.
LaMarca?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McClain?
Yes.
McCurdy?
No.
Morales?
No.
Trabalsi?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
No.
Williams?
No.
Chair Latvala?
Yes.
16 yeas. 15 yeas, 6 nays.
By your vote, House Bill 7051 will be reported favorably. Last, let's take up Representative Mariano's SB 1552. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. This bill saves from repeal the Stanley G. Tate Florida Prepaid College Foundation, Inc., which is a direct support organization for the Florida Prepaid College Board. Their initiatives are specifically Florida Prepaid Tuition Scholarship Program, and this bill would save the repeal of these scholarship programs. That is the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Mariano. Are there questions on the bill? Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I just have a general question about one word that we have here, and I'm only referring back to the one word because I served on PI, and there was another nonprofit organization which was not going through the proper steps of being audited. And on the page 3, it mentioned additionally an audit general may conduct audits. Will this be something outside of the norm of the contracts that's already in place where they will not be audited from time to time, or this a may or shall be in place at this particular time for the bill itself?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure the answer to that question. You know, the Senate and House professional staff review the documents to make sure that they are in compliance. I can get the answer for you on that one. I'm not technically the sponsor of this bill. Otherwise, I would have made sure to have that for you, but we can get that for you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? There are no amendments. We will now move into public testimony. There are no appearance cards. Is there debate?
In debate.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
You are recognized.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I asked that question because I remember when serving on PI, the nonprofit organization that I'm referring to, I'm not going to call that name, but there was millions of dollars that was taken, and those millions of dollars was able to be taken because this an audit was not being conducted on an annual basis, and the person that was supposed to be conducting the audit just skipped over that process. So I want to make sure that we watch the taxpayer money, if it's anything that we can put in place to make it possible to make sure that these funds are safe and we are doing the right thing for the tax, for the people.
Yes, ma'am. Whip Andrade, you're recognized in the debate.
Thank you, Chair. I'm supporting this bill, and I think it might alleviate some concerns. The requirement for an organization like this, if it's raised over $100,000 in state funds, it's to be audited every year and turn that information over to the state with the option for the Auditor General to go and inspect those audits themselves and do a deeper dive. So I have no concerns about the financial security of the money flowing through this program and intend to support it and keep it moving forward.
Any other members wishing to debate? Seeing none, Representative Mariano, you're recognized to close.
I'll waive close, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mariano. Missy, please call the roll.
Representative Zalupas?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Arrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Michalski?
Yes.
LaMarca?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McClain?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Huck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Latvala?
Yes. By your vote, SB 1552 will be reported favorably. This concludes our work for today and our work this session. I just wanted to tell you all it's been a pleasure to serve as your chair, and I wanted to thank the speaker for giving me this assignment. Vice Chair McClain, you've done a wonderful job serving as the vice chair. The sub-chairs in this silo, Mariano, Alupis, McClain, y'all have done a tremendous amount of work, and I'm proud of each and every one of you. Whip Andrade, you've done a masterful job with your assignment. Ranking Member Williams, you've been the ranking member in my committees the last 4 years, and you've served this committee and your caucus extremely well, and it's been an honor to serve alongside of you. I wanted to thank my aide, Amy Gregory, who is by far the best legislative aide in the Florida House. Joanna Hassel, who is the most brilliant employee in the Florida House. The work that you've done for our students in your years in the House will leave a lasting impact on students of this state, and whoever sits in this chair next term will be mighty lucky to have you alongside of them, as well as Jason Fudge, who's the Deputy Staff Director. Y'all have done a tremendous job. The three policy chiefs, Adam Brink, Chris Sanchez, Carrington Kiner, thank you for the work that y'all have done. The other people in the education suite, Naomi Sleep, Taylor Wolf, Kelly Aronson, Shana Cohen, Missy Jones, thank you for always keeping us on task. Kirsten Olson, Toka Bennett, and Nicole Washington, thank you all for the work that y'all have done. And that concludes our business for today. Oh, Representative Bush, do you have something?
Thank you.
You need to leave us with a sermon?
thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I would be remiss if I did not say how delighted I am to have had this opportunity to work with you on this committee. I'm going into my 15th year, and I want you to know I thank you for your friendship. I thank you for your leadership and your encouragement. It's not going to be the same next year, not seeing your face and not hearing that voice. However, if you're ever in Miami, call me. I'll take you. I can get you some soul food. With that, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. All right, this isn't going to turn into a love fest very quickly. Lamarck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't worry, it won't. Mr. Chairman, as one of the four members, I think by my quick guess on this committee, Hawkins, Bell, myself, and McClain haven't spent some time on a county commission. I would just say that in your future endeavors, you're going to bring a lot of wisdom and the ability to reach across the aisle and reach across compromise and we've seen it here on this committee, and we've seen it on the floor. I won't give you a hard time on the floor, but I thought this was the right place to do it and appreciate all your leadership.
Thank you. Quickly, Representative Ventrovsky.
Thank you, Chair Latvala. I just wanted to thank you for all the work you've done in your time in the legislature. I know this is the last time we'll be meeting here. It's been an honor to have you as the chair of this committee. I want to thank you for the heart and the work that you put into our schools and our students. And I want to thank you for always having an open door, always willing to have a conversation about policy, even when we disagree. I think the most disagreeable I've ever seen you is when you found out I was a Red Sox fan. But I just want to just say thank you. You've been a great chair, and it's been wonderful working with you, and we're going to miss you.
Well, thank you. A friend of mine today told me that they toured Fenway. So I asked them about the Green Monster, and you know what they said? They said, and I quote, "What is the Green Monster?" I will not say who that individual is because I do not want to embarrass her. But with Vice Chair McClain, moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.